From Variety, celebrating more than 115 years covering the business of entertainment, this is the Award Circuit Podcast. Hold on, it's an emergency podcast. We talked to Better Call Saul stars Bob Odenkirk and Ray Seahorn about the series finale of Better Call Saul, and there's no time to spare. In the end, Jimmy McGill unbroke bad. Just when it looked like Saul Goodman, played by Bob Odenkirk, had finessed his way into a sweet plea agreement, just 7 years at the most country club-like of correctional facilities, he reversed course and confessed all in Monday night's series finale of AMC's Better Call Saul. It was a finale rife with references to regret, time machines, and how there's no shame in going back and changing your path, as Chuck McGill, played by Michael McKean, who returned in a flashback, tells his younger brother. With Breaking Bad stars Bryan Cranston and Betsy Brandt also making an appearance, there is plenty for fans of the entire Breaking Bad, Better Call Saul universe to sink their teeth into. But ultimately, it came down to an ending that mirrored the very first episode of Better Call Saul. Jimmy and Kim back up against the wall, literally sharing a smoke, with most everything left unsaid.
Ma'am?
No cuffs, please. Thank you. Hi, Jimmy.
Hi. How did you...
Turns out my New Mexico bar card doesn't have an expiration date.
Jimmy has been sentenced to 86 years in prison, and Kim, played by Ray Seahorn, could be hit with a massive civil lawsuit for her role in Howard Hamlin's death. And yet, in the scheme of things for Better Call Saul and Breaking Bad, it was kind of a happy ending. I'm Michael Schneider, and on this episode of the Variety Award Circuit Podcast, we talk to Bob Odenkirk and Ray Seahorn about the series finale of Better Call Saul. We begin by talking about whether they had seen the episode before Monday night and how they watched it.
I hadn't seen it, and Bob, had you seen it? I had not seen it.
And Bob's shaking his head no. Well, we'll have to, verbally explain what he's doing.
No, I had not seen it, and it was really fun to watch it, and what we did, and Ray, you can tell him what we did. We had a viewing party here at my house with so many great people from the show, and it was just the best. It was the best.
Well, that's
one of
not...
the best nights of my life.
That's
it was amazing. If we could have invited every single person, we would have, but we were crammed into Bob and Naomi's living room. So we did the best we could. But it was lovely. Tears, joy, and all. I think most people in the room, I would say more people in the room had not seen it than had seen it. Wow. So that was fun.
And so what was the reaction like? What was the, was there any moment of you could hear a pin drop? Were there moments of just nervous laughter?
You know, if you needed to hear a pin drop, you were in the right room.
we were serious watchers. I liked hearing the gasp when people saw Betsy Brandt there. That was fun.
Yeah, I actually had to pause, rewind, and did I just see who I thought I saw? That was pretty amazing.
You could hear a pin drop through the whole courtroom scene, for sure. People loved Bob and Bryan Cranston's scene. There were people that were very moved by Kim beginning to practice law in any way again. We got quite a lovely reception for when he walks into the prison cell and Kim is there.
Yeah.
You know, listen, there were just a lot of feelings in that room. Six years of the show, for all of us, the biggest show in our lives. Mm-hmm. The risk that Vince and Peter took, and they were both there with their significant others, and the risk that they took in giving us these great parts. We just all had so many feelings about our careers, but about our lives and our families.
The significant others, Vince's. I love the fact that Holly had her little cameo sitting next to you on the bus when you have sort of the breakdown moment.
Yeah,
and even see her hand at one point, kind of like
yes.
So. I
told her hand was written about. There was someone online that was writing about that scene and said the person's hand that reaches out to try to comfort Kim That's all of our hands.
We are all Holly at that moment.
So great. Yep.
Well, I know you guys were talking earlier about the courtroom scene and how you know, it took 3 days to sort of perfect it. And Ray, you had to sort of sit there in the back the entire time. So I'm always curious, what is that as an actor? Sort of, you know, on the one hand, to me, I'd be like, easiest day ever, just kick back, relax. But I know you're such a professional. You're probably busy thinking about, you know, still like motivation.
Think the thoughts. What's the thoughts? Yeah, what can we thinking? Yeah. I mean, this sounds so cheesy, but I mean it. And having played a character that is often in scenes and not speaking, I think, like, it doesn't matter if you have lines or not. If you're in the scene, you're in the scene. If you're in the scene, you are a scene partner. The absence of dialogue has very little to do with your importance in the scene. It is obviously a huge monologue of Bob's, of Jimmy's. I am an active partner in that scene. And even just sitting behind him, whether you can see my face or not, like, she's actively part of some of the decisions he's making in that moment. It was great. I mean, and it was great to watch Bob go through all the different configurations. And then, as he has said, in the third day, deciding to redo it. He wanted to do it over, less emotionally. I don't know if he's going to rejoin us. I'll just speak for him.
Jimmy, can you hear me? I don't know why. I can't keep track of the Zoom at once. But look, I had to do it a third day. It was a really hard monologue to do. I was so thankful that Ray was there and Betsy was there. And those characters exerted pressure on Saul, different kinds of pressure. And, you know, so they're very much, like Ray says, scene partners in that scene, despite it being a monologue, because he's making choices. It's not unlike the first scene with Saul and Walter White, and had that long monologue in the office. And I kept asking myself, why is he talking so much? Hmm. And then the more I took the monologue apart, the more I saw that Saul was making different choices depending on the reaction he was getting from Walter White. So he's always taken in the reaction of the person he's talking to. And in this case, he's talking to an audience of Kim. And Betsy secondarily, but mostly Kim.
Yeah, yeah. And clearly he wanted her there for that. And as right. You're watching in that final version, you're not quite not sure where he's going. And I'm not sure he knows where he's going. But as he sort of progresses in his monologue, he becomes more sure. And if anything, he overshares. I love the part where they're like, that Chuck stuff, I don't even think that's illegal. Why would you even bring that up? Like, he's on a roll at that point.
Yeah, he is. He's really seen that it's a watershed moment of him breaking good and letting go of his manipulation of his persona and trying to just be as real as he can be and as open and accepting as he can be. And it's a good choice. Yeah, I love it. I love the choice he makes. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and one of the things that, you know, when Jimmy becomes full Saul and you start to wonder, is there any Jimmy left in him? But even in that scene where he and Walter White are underground, you suddenly see Jimmy again. He's suddenly vulnerable again. So what's your thought, Bob, in how much of even during those darkest Saul days, was there any Jimmy in him at that point? Or how was he able to find his inner Jimmy again?
Yeah, you know, listen, I think that he's always Jimmy McGill. He's just, he's on a program. He's running a program when he's Saul Goodman. And he's doing it with conscious effort, you know, just like when he tells Walter White, it's a fake, it's a phony, it's a front. I'm just doing this for the homeboys. You know, he's choosing to be this guy and it's working for him. He's enjoying it. And he's not feeling doubt, and he's not wanting anyone's love, who's not going to give it to him. and he's not wanting anyone's approval, who's not going to give it to him. And he's, Jimmy's still inside him, and it's letting go of that front, of that facade that allows him to be as honest as he is in that courtroom. And he needs to do that to be at peace with his life. And it's just a beautiful thing that they wrote. And I think for the right reasons. I mean, it's, if Kim wasn't in that room, he would have run his little game and gotten his 7 years. And the crazy thing is, he wanted her to be in that room.
Yeah.
But then he brings her into the room, and then standing in front of her, he realizes, I'm just going to cement in her mind, the only person I care about, that I'm a piece of shit who will manipulate any situation to his advantage. And that's where I'm going to land in life. I'm going to end here at Saul Goodman. And he knows that that's a grotesque and pathetic way to land. And I think the other thing is, the character has aged. He's gotten older. I mean, there's years have gone by. And it's six, 7 years since they split up. And so now, you know, I think with age, he realizes it's just not worth it. It's not worth ending his life on that foot.
Right.
So would the two of you call this a happy ending?
It's weird. I think it is. Yes. It's crazy because he's going to jail for the rest of his life. And I absolutely consider it the best ending he could have, because he's at peace with himself, and he's earned her love. And he knows that even though they can't be together, you know, he proved himself to the one person he cared about.
How about you, Ray?
I mean, happy is hard to wrap your head around, right? But I find it hopeful, and I do find it to be, it's positive. I do think it's there is light. There is light there. And I agree with Bob. It's about living without the burden that they both have had hanging over them their whole lives, trying to outrun what people think of them. And you know, certainly Jimmy more than Kim, but we know Kim didn't come from a safe, positive upbringing either. And I think it's I found it to be a positive ending, and the happiest that you could be for those people.
Yeah, Ray, speaking of burdens, 6 years of being asked if Kim's gonna die, you're not gonna have to answer that question anymore. Are you gonna miss that that constant fear from the fans?
I will miss the lovely constant dialogue I have with fans and their concern for her. I love that they saw her as a real person. I mean, it was it's amazing. It's amazing what Peter and Vince and all of our writers and directors did. And what I got to do, we made a person that was fully three-dimensional to the fans and the critics, and I'm super proud of that.
Yeah, and that's why it was so fun to see her dying inside in Florida with the
right,
the wig and the conversations, the fact that she couldn't figure out what ice cream flavor to order, so just go with vanilla.
She doesn't trust herself to make any decisions anymore. Nothing. When Kim makes decisions, people die. She's like, I'm done. I'm out. I'm tapping out.
So what's the Kim spinoff going to look like?
I don't know. If they want to do one, I'll be there. I just need a call time.
She takes a job as a prison warden, and the wackiness ensues when she gets mixed up with Jimmy McGill.
I like the title. Maybe. I like Wackiness Ensues as a title.
Wackiness Ensues. That's the title.
The Kim Wexler story. well, she is going back to some kind of public defender type work. So it's not public defender. It's like a low. I don't know what kind of law firm that is. Like a public,
it's like
service
pro bono volunteer stuff. Yeah.
I want to see that show.
Absolutely. It's sort of like Night Court, but with Kim Wexler. I would watch that. The other thing I was telling Peter Gould the other day is, I love that now, like, the writers did the research. If we ever do end up sort of having to go to a prison, we know exactly which prison to go to, and which prison not to. The one with golf, apparently. Yeah. That's an option. So.
Yeah.
What were your favorite moments of these final episodes? Not just the finale, but really this last run. I guess since we sort of like segued to the black and white future, Ray, did you sort of have any moments that stand out to you?
Favorite, you know, it's hard because it's such an embarrassment of riches. Like I loved the flow of all of the last couple of scenes, and just the storytelling that was going on. And the Florida stuff was hard, trying to figure out who this person is and what is the timbre of her voice, and
yeah,
making sure you can't tell Kim is there. Like you know, it shouldn't look like she's depressed and suppressing this until she gets the phone call from him and then the birthday song, and you see that. And so that was a lot of fun to figure out. I'd be hard pressed to say that my favorite scenes are usually the ones that I have with Bob, though, just because he's the best scene partner ever, but also because of the history of the characters and the work we put into the characters. It's like everything has 9 layers of meaning, everything they say to each other, everything they don't say to each other. So those are always a lot of fun to work with. But those Florida gals that played my friends, they were awesome. We had a good time. And Alvin that played Glenn, my boyfriend, he did a great job.
Oh, the dullest, just like most uninteresting boyfriend in the world.
But nothing's wrong with him. They made sure to like, there's actually nothing wrong with anything in that life.
Yeah. You know, Mayo versus Miracle Whip. It's an honest question.
Sure.
Well, you guys must have heard the screaming of millions of fans for that final scene with the cigarettes.
I hear people liked it a lot.
Yeah, I think.
I think it's the two characters at peace with themselves and realizing what a great relationship they had. You know, not that they didn't know that, but I think in that moment, there's really a sense of like, this was the best, you know, just a person you can hang out with. Is always the best.
So yeah. And that slice of like the bond that they have that is not tarnished, that's bigger than, ooh, we get turned on by doing scams together. Like in the end, like their utter stillness and there not being a need to talk and do and pretend and run around. To me, it was the slice of them that is very real and is not tarnished and is not touched.
And I love the idea that there's that glimmer of maybe Kim will help Saul / Jimmy sort of reduce his sentence and get out on good behavior. So, and
yeah, I don't know. He's got 86 years. I mean, I don't know what he's gonna get. He's gotta take care of himself because the best he's gonna do is get out when he's, you know. I don't know, 95. if he reduces his sentence.
He's putting that Cinnabon work to good practice in the cafeteria there at the prison.
Yeah, that's funny to draw that parallel. Can't help but see it right away.
But that final scene, that was the final scene that you guys shot. So the cigarette scene was the final scene that you guys shot. What was that like on set? What was that? That must have been just such a moment for the entire staff. I know a lot of the other cast generally likes to join in and watch other scenes.
Yeah.
Like what was sort of that like that day when you shot that?
You know, I gotta say, I guess I said it earlier today, it was one of the easiest scenes I ever shot in my life. Those two characters, like I say, at peace, kind of having owned up to their feelings and what they've done, their actions, and sharing their space together, which they're so good at, which they're so comfortable at, and full awareness of who the other one is and really, appreciating each other. And it was just easy to do. I mean, they just could stand and smoke that cigarette for as long as that cigarette will last, and they could do it, and I could do it too. It was just a joy and a easy flow of energy.
Yeah, how about for you, Ray?
Yeah, Bob's right. I mean, there's so much, you know, you have to be careful to not, like, you have to bring yourself to any scene and your day, but at the same time, making sure to do your job and not play whatever was going on in the outside world in a scene if it's not appropriate. But this was one where it was this wonderful marriage of Bob and I having, you know, a 7-year history, the characters having an even longer history, and being at peace and having so many emotions about things that they can't even articulate, but also not needing to just be. A lot of our cast members had gone and left, and because of COVID, you can't have everybody come back for everything. But we had the whole crew there, and even that was helpful because I knew that I couldn't just let all of the wave of emotions of like, this is the last day on the soundstage doing the show, come up in the scene. But Kim also cannot fall apart in the prison cell, and so they were all things that were informing each other, and it was nice just to have that last couple of hours with those characters. I think Bob and I both really enjoyed savoring being in their skin one more time in such a still way.
Yeah, no, and I think you're right. That's one moment where the emotion of the gravity of the actual situation lent itself perfectly to on screen. So that was really cool to see too.
Yeah.
So we mentioned Betsy Brandt returning, and of course we got our fill of Jesse Pinkman and Walter White over the past couple of episodes. But Bob, I'm curious for you, what was that like to re-enter that Breaking Bad world? It's so funny in the timeline of the series, it's not that many, it's not that long ago. But of course, when you actually shot Breaking Bad, that was a long time ago. That must have been surreal to sort of revisit that dynamic and work.
Yeah, you're talking about the first night where they kidnap me and take me to the Winnebago out to the desert. And that was one of the first things I shot in Breaking Bad. And there was first the hurdle of trying to make me look younger. But Sherry, our makeup artist, just is amazing. And just with makeup, she was able to fill out my face and really, I think, did a great job. But being in the Winnebago with the guys was hilarious, funny, wonderful, a kick. It was great. I mean, in this show, I slide around time. I slip through time holes constantly, you know, a day can have Saul from, you know, when he just got to Albuquerque to Saul, you know, at the current moment to Breaking Bad times. And so it's the job and it's the challenge of the job. And it's a joy to do it because it keeps things lively. But it was just fun as hell. And of course, you know, Bryan Cranston is a lot of fun on set. He laughs a lot and he's comfortable. And Aaron Paul is the greatest as well. Very experienced actor now. And we just had a great time and fun to go back and live in those Breaking Bad days when things were going our way briefly.
Well, time is a funny thing when you think about the fact that Aaron Paul is now in his 40s, but you know, having to still go back and play teenage Jesse Pinkman in those flashbacks. It's crazy. But so that was a lot of fun. And Ray, just getting a chance to see Kim in that timeline, to realize she was there in that timeline. She even was in Albuquerque during that timeline and had that brush with Jesse. Was pretty wild to put all those puzzle pieces together.
Very cool. And I thought they used that scene so well, showing two people on the opposite ends of realizing where their path went wrong. You know, Kim is on the other side of realizing that that her life right now is a product of many wrong turns. He's at the beginning, about to experience that, and still thinks everything is smooth sailing. And also the juxtaposition of Aaron's energy as Jesse in that is so great, and it's upbeat and it's ridiculous and inane and all over the place. And hers, we know, it was yet another scene where the audience is actually Kim's confidant in the moment. They know what she's thinking and feeling as she stands there. And he has no idea, because I loved the scene that's in the office as well, that precedes it with Jimmy and him, you know, doing this huge false front to pretend that he doesn't care about them anymore. And Kim knows it, but it still hurts. And that was a really fun scene to play. We audibly heard the crew go, ugh, when he said, you know, when he's like, have a nice life. They were like, oh my God, oh.
<It's> quite a few cringe moments.
Right.
But it's great to see all of that. But also, going back to the finale real quick, one of the themes is regret, the time machine, of course. For the two of you, if you, it's the question you'll probably get a lot because of that finale, but did you think at all about sort of personally, where would you go with the time machine? Is there sort of a moment in time that you sort of look back at and say, I would go back and maybe do this again differently? Or
for Kim or for me?
For you, for Ray Sehorn.
Gosh, no. I mean, I do go over in my head the times I've hurt people accidentally or not, that, you know, I'm never proud of that. But other than that, I don't really look back on my life as something that I should have done this or could have done that, because I'm very thankful for the life I have right now, and all roads led to this.
Good answer. How about you, Bob? When you think about the question that your character asks?
Yes. I was raised Catholic. I would like to go back and fix things. You know, shame and all those wonderful feelings that you get from being, you know, growing up that way. So yeah, there's things I would change.
Now let's talk about the two of you real quick. You've obviously got to know each other well during these past 6-7 years, even lived together with the lovely Patrick Fabian. Is there a question about the performance, the characters, just the person that you have for one another that maybe you've always been curious about, but you've never asked the other person?
Gosh, that's hard to answer, because we have a very open, candid friendship. We do ask each other questions of deep, deep importance, and everything from career stuff to philosophical things. And the good news is we have a very real friendship in real life outside of the show. So thankfully I'm not finished talking to him. I'll have questions for him for the rest of my life.
I don't think Ray has an answer to this, or maybe not one that she'd be willing to share. Because, the story's, you know, it's done, Ray. So what the hell happened to Kim? I mean, why is she, we know her mother was irresponsible. Mm-hmm. We know she as a kid was super responsible to compensate. But the whole scammy part of Kim and the willingness and even desire to break the rules and to be excited by that. What mm-hmm. the fuck happened to her? Was her dad a con man? Was she, was she a very, very good kid who secretly wanted to break the rules, and as an adult found that she could? When she was in her early 20s, was she doing a lot of crazy ass shit before she got her shit together?
Yeah, I think, I do think her dad was a con man. I think he was in and out of their lives, and any gifts that he gave, like, you always knew they were probably stolen. And then I think she pulled some cons, and I think she shoplifted again. You saw her do it once. I think she did it again. And I think she started to realize that the only way she was going to have a better life than those around her in the small town she was in would be if she went about it in a very slippery way and made a decision that she wanted to see what she could do on the straight and narrow. And I think by the time she gets to the mailroom and meets Jimmy, she has made a decision where she wants to prove to herself that she could make something out of herself on the up and up. But there's a part of her that always gets drawn back to the coloring outside of the lines and the more colorful way to do it. And I think that her upbringing is also part of why she really, I think she was, she and her family were very much treated like crap for being, I think they lived in a trailer park. And I think there was a lot of class issues for how she and her family were treated that later makes her have such disdain for the Howard Hamlins of the world.
Mm-hmm. How about that? How about that for an answer?
It's a great answer. So
that's because Michael, because Kim's a mystery. Jimmy, yeah. We know his backstory. We know a lot of what drives him, but Kim is not. You know, I have to go now. I have to do another interview starting now. So,
through that person.
Thank you so much for the interest in the show and sharing with people. You know, what we did and our very lofty goals that we had throughout the whole run of the show. We gave it our all. We wanted to make it as great as it could. And coming out of Breaking Bad, we had a high standard to try to achieve.
And you know what? Because these final episodes are eligible for the 2023 Emmys, you're going to be talking about this for the next year. So
that's right.
There'll be many more panels. There are going to be many more events.
And we are going to need all the help we can get, Michael, to make people know that those final episodes are actually for the next Emmy.
Yeah, no.
By the way, we're also going to get Carol Burnett an Emmy. I mean,
yeah.
Let's talk real quick before you have to go, Bob. I mean, working with the legend, and I love the fact that it's Carol Burnett who ultimately dropped a dime on Jimmy. That's why he's in jail now.
Yeah, it's the best. It was the greatest time ever. And of course, she's a truly great actress with depth and range and sensitivity to her performance. It's beautiful. When she says, "I trusted you," it's heartbreaking. And so it was very easy to play opposite that. And to play Jimmy losing his cool and losing his persona because his heart breaks looking in her face. And so I couldn't have been happier to get to spend the time I got with Carol Burnett acting. And she's full of energy. Hopefully it can happen again one day.
Had you worked with her before, Bob?
No, never. Only dreamed of meeting her one day. I mean, her show was such a part of my childhood.
Yeah.
But her, you know, just her acting chops are the best, the highest rank there is. And she should get a fucking Emmy.
Absolutely. Did she know about Mr. Show? Does she know your best?
No, I don't think she knows Mr. Show at all. No.
Because she's
a huge Better Call Saul fan, though.
There you go. So.
Yeah. She talked to Vince about that. That's how Vince knew.
So I was just going to say, sketch icon to sketch icon. That's...
I know. It was really, she's an icon, and it was great to work with her. And this has been the greatest experience of my career, and it'll never be better. And that's okay, because anything this good, you can't ask for more in this business. You can't. You can only hope to get it one time, and you're crazy lucky if you do. So the fact that I got it, I'll just never feel anything but joy and gratitude thinking back on it, and try to bring some of the excellence and effort and in the good vibes to every other set I go to going forward. It's just try to bring some of this professionalism and humanity to all the other projects that I hope I get to do. That's going to be my goal.
Well, Bob, congratulations on what a run.
Thank you.
We'll let you go to your other interview, I'll just stay with Ray for a bit longer.
Please do.
Talk to you later, Bob.
See you guys. Take care.
So, Ray, are you in that introspective moment yet, where you're sort of thinking about sort of what this show means to you and what's next? And I know we've talked a bit about what's next, and I know you're sort of. You've got some stuff on your plate. Congrats, by the way, on the pickup of season 2 of Cooper's Bar.
Thank you. Yeah, that'll be fun to write some more of those. I mean, be with the writers writing them. I don't physically write them myself. Yeah, and I'm reading some scripts and in various meetings to figure out what's next. Well, like you said, because part of this is for the next award cycle. I'm thankful, like I'm hanging on to any little scraps where I can tell myself that it's not over. Bob has also said, I think like it will still take a couple of months before we realize we're used to doing filming the show, then it's airing, then we're talking about it, then you have a little break, and then you pack up the U-Haul for New Mexico and go back and film more. So probably will still like hit me again in another wave when we're not going back to tell more stories. Watching the finale though last night, I think Peter did such a beautiful job. It was that I did feel the weight of that. I was like, oh, that's a goodbye chapter. That's what that is.
And that's a feat. As we know, final episodes are difficult.
Yeah.
People are quick to shit all over finales. So
yep.
To pull it off, that is a feat in itself. And it's, universally, I think people, as they say, you guys stuck the landing.
Oh, good. I'm glad you think so. You can't please everybody. There's no way. But I was very proud of the fact that I think it went out on a note that was unique to our show, as thankful as we are to have Breaking Bad be our mothership. There are differences in the show, and it does stand on its own, and it has its own sort of timber to it. And I loved that it went out in that way. It went out philosophically and very much a moral tale. So was Breaking Bad, but I was very happy that it didn't end, like in explosions and a gunfight. I think it rewarded the viewers and the fans for all of these deeper questions the show has been raising this whole time, and the themes and the morals in it.
Yeah, I think Peter brought up the fact that, it made sense that that Breaking Bad, El Camino, and Better Call Saul all ended very differently, all had very different endings, and that makes sense for
I think so.
The main characters in those projects. So,
mm-hmm.
And I'm glad one thing that he mentioned was the original idea was to end Better Call Saul on a sort of a little more of a sour note. And a starker note. And I'm glad it didn't end that way. I'm glad that it went with a little more of this hope that at least these two characters got their souls back, even if it means Jimmy's going to spend the rest of his life in prison and Ray's about to have her ass sued by Howard Hamlin's widow. She doesn't have anything. I don't know what
she has yet, but... she can have my cardigans and my jean skirt.
The wig and the wig. Yeah. Well, Ray, looking forward to probably many more panels, with you and Bob and everything. So we'll, that'll be a treat over the next year. Hopefully, we'll do a few more of these, but it's always a treat to talk to you and always a pleasure. So thanks.
You as well. Thank you. Thank you for all of your considered questions and support of the show and me.
That's Bob Odenkirk and Ray C. Horn, Emmy-nominated stars of Better Call Saul. And that's it for this edition of Variety's Award Circuit Podcast. Michael Schneider is the producer. Be sure to subscribe to the Award Circuit Podcast on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever you download podcasts. Also, head on over to Variety.com and click on the Award Circuit tab to find the latest Emmy predictions and key races, as well as your daily fix of news, analysis, and reviews. For Jazz Tanke, Emily Longaretta, and Clayton Davis, I'm Michael Schneider, and we'll see you on the circuit.